San Francisco or Ascapula. You're gonna have to leave me now, I know. But I see you in the sky above and tall grass in the winter love. You're gonna make me lonesome when you go.
Just a few minutes, we'll be ready, yes.
Looks like we'll be ready to start in just a few minutes.
Friends.
Well, I
Down the hallway.
super tip. We're coming for the jackpot. The backstage manager was pacing all around by his chair. There's something funny going on, he said, I can just feel it in the air. He went to get the hanging judge, but the hanging judge was drunk. And the leading actor hurried by in the costume of a monk. There was no actor anywhere better than the jackpot. No one knew the circumstance, but they say that it happened pretty quick. They darned to the dressing room, burst open and they cooled it all pretty quick. Studying her eyes, she was with Big Jim, but she was leaning to the jackpot. Two doors down, the boys finally made it through the wall. And cleaned out the bank safe, it said they got off with quite a haul. In the darkness by the riverbed, they waited on the ground for one more member. Just like in town, but they couldn't go no further without the jackpot. The next day was hanging day, the sky was overcast and black. Big Jim lay covered up, killed by a knife in the back. On the scene, missing was the jackpot. The cabaret was empty now, a sign said closed for repair. Lily had already taken all of the dye out of her hair. She was thinking about her father, who she very rarely saw. Thinking about Rosemary, thinking about the law. But most of all, she was thinking about the jackpot.
Oh, it's working.
Imagine.
Well, good morning to you all. For those of you that got here early, let this be a lesson. We're glad to have you here. We're starting now our session of the General Assembly. We're obviously very pleased to be here in Stockholm. In particular, we'd like to say thank you to our huge contingent in the press that must be out there covering this event. And I'd like to begin, as the new chair, by making a particular note of thanks to our former chair, Roberto, who is not with us at the moment, and for the fine services of his alternate chair, Harold. Harold's to my right, and it's been quite a year. Harold, would you like to say a few words? Well, it has been a year. How time flies. And it's been very interesting to try to manage this little corner of open process. I think we've managed to get some benefit from having a place where people could speak simply because they were people, and be listened to by parts of the ICANN process. We also proved definitely that in order to speak in public, in a place where anyone can speak, you have to, and get some intelligence out of it, you have to have a rather thick skin and be able to deal with people who have plenty of time and very thick skins. It's a rather rough process. But I think that we managed to do something worthwhile. And I hope that the new chairs will find good ways to go forward with this.
Well, we are going to give it a try. There's probably quite a few of you that don't perhaps know what the General Assembly is all about. So I'd like to spend just a few brief minutes on that topic. The General Assembly is essentially, at least to my view, the most representative body in the entire ICANN organization. I say that because we are a collection of individuals. And we're a collection of individuals that essentially represent every side of every single issue under consideration within the DNSO. You bring up the issue, we've got the arguments, we've got the voices there. They're loud, they're noisy, they're aggravated, but we're on top of it. Now, because we're individuals, we sympathize with the causes of individuals. We advocate for the rights of the public. We as an organization are proud to have repeatedly lobbied for the individual's right to vote in the ICANN process. What we are is essentially the bottoms-up empowerment that confers legitimacy on the ICANN organization. We are the watchdogs. We are the stewards of the public trust. At this time, however, we still don't have an individual's constituency. At this time, the General Assembly still does not have any voting power in this organization. Only the special interest groups, our constituencies, have got the specific right under the bylaws within the Names Council to vote on domain name policy issues. We, the public, we've only got our voice, the power of persuasion. We don't have the right to vote, so because of that, we take issues of representation very, very seriously, and we put them at the top of our list of priorities. We look around at our situation. We see things like the 2001-2002 proposed budget. We notice the budget has set aside no funds for the election of our at-large directors. It disturbed us. This is a matter that we brought up in the GA, essentially a call to arms. What's going on here? Why is it that we've got 12 members on the budget group, 4 members on the finance committee, the president of ICANN, the ICANN staff, and between all of them, they don't remember that we need money for the at-large election? All right, perhaps it's an oversight. Perhaps.
It's not.
We also noticed that the Names Council has embarked on a plan that would potentially deny poor constituencies the right to vote if certain levels of financial contributions weren't reached. We said, you can't do this. This is wrong. Domain name policies cannot be voted on by a body that is less than fully representative of the entirety of the internet community. Now, many of our stakeholders are poor. We understand that. And we know that we cannot create barriers to entry for new and emerging constituencies by abiding by funding models that favor only the wealthier special interests. We say to ourselves what we are doing, what the Names Council has put forward as their plan, is wrong. We need another solution. Now, we have seen actions taken. We have seen our council shutting down working groups of the General Assembly. In particular, the last DNSO review working group, in our opinion, was shut down prematurely. We had dozens and dozens of participants eager to continue working, eager for an ongoing review process to fix what is broken. Instead, the council pulled the plug, shut down the working group, terminated the mailing list. We did not take that kindly. In the GA, we are delighted to have been able to create a brand new mailing list to support the ongoing review of our organization. We are the first to admit that we have problems, but we are also the first to admit that we are prepared to deal with those problems. That's why we are here. One of our concerns is that we are tired. We are tired of waiting for action. Since Melbourne, we have waited for our council to adopt the most basic terms of reference so that interim committees can get moving, so that they can decide how they are going to interact with the General Assembly, so that we can all work together on issues that affect us all. But 3 months to come up with terms of reference, this is a bit much. We are saying it's time to speed up the process. The public has been clamoring for new domain names. The public is saying, let's get on with it. Let's fix what's broken. If we have a broken UDRP, let's deal with it. If we need to act to protect the privacy rights of individuals, if we need to respect the initiatives of the European community, initiatives of organizations like TUCAUS to deal with privacy, let's get on with it. Now, we supposedly should be asking, all right, what has the General Assembly been doing to get the job done? In fact, what have been our own particular achievements since Melbourne? To answer that, I'd like to bring up the fact that the General Assembly took it upon itself to raise an issue and bring it to the attention of the Names Council, specifically the danger of collisions in namespace. We have a worry. We worry about the stability of the internet. We worry that we did not have in place a policy with respect to our alternate root community. Again, another part of our internet world. So, all right. How have we dealt with it since notifying the Names Council? We have started by creating separate topical mailing lists. The first list was devoted specifically to the area of alternate routes. There's been a lot of comments. Between that particular list and the GA full list, we probably had in the course of the last month well over 1,000 comments just on this one single area. We have tried to cooperate with the Names Council. The Names Council put out a general request for a briefing paper. They felt the need to be particularly better educated on the subject. We put forward that briefing paper, and we're pleased to see efforts on the part of Names Council members Grant Forsyth, Milton Muller, also put forward their own briefing papers. We now see Mr. Lynn putting forward his briefing paper. We see New.net putting forward their policy paper. What this is telling us is that we have the start of a process. We can now begin to deal with contentious issues on a substantive basis. In view of that, we have called upon the Names Council to get moving, to create a working group officially so that we can move forward with this particular project. And yes, we have been waiting. We've been waiting patiently for the Names Council to do the right thing, to designate the research and drafting committees, the working groups of the GA, to carry out our substantive work as required by the bylaws. What concerns us, we take a look at interim committees and we say to ourselves, what we've got going on is an end run around the bylaws. Instead of members of the General Assembly being put on these particular committees to handle the substantive work, we're seeing only members of the Names Council. It's not right. We are here to ask the Names Council to start cooperating with the General Assembly. We are here. We are excited about the prospect of getting down to work. We want to have the opportunity to join in a fuller, more cooperative venture. We see ourselves as the organization that brings the bottoms-up legitimacy to the consensus-building process. Consensus is a rather unique animal. It's something that obligates us to engage in outreach, to fully document the outreach, to cite all the relevant minority opinions and the intensity of opposition to any one particular majority view. You can't get that done in a committee of three or four people. You can't get that done with the tiny task force approach that has been adopted so far. Now, we've got no particular love for the task force approach. We've seen the Names Council Review Task Force filter and water down our work product to the point where the consensus view is no longer articulated. So we have no love for what has happened thus far. No particular fondness for responding only to questionnaires. The way we see it, a dialogue is necessary. We need the back and forth, the give and take that allows for consensus to be achieved. But with that said, we do recognize the important and vital role of the Names Council. Their role is to manage the consensus building process. We understand their obligation under the bylaws to adopt procedures, to adopt policies that are required to carry out that responsibility. And they have, in fact, received the final report of the working group that was charged with developing those procedures and policies. Now that there is a complete understanding of how a working group is to proceed and move forward, the General Assembly is saying the groundwork is finished, the recommendations have been made, there's no more excuses. It's time to use the General Assembly, it's time to establish the working groups to deal with the issues that affect us all. Now, there are some of you that have taken a look at the GA list. There's a lot of complaints. We have an extraordinarily high signal-to-noise ratio on our lists, but I'd like to make a comment about that. I was fortunate to be one of a group of maybe 120 people that participated in the last DNSL review working group. And what I can tell you from my experience was that we did not have the degree of flaming, of animosity, of bitterness, of personal attacks, of decorum violations that we now suffer on the GA list. Why? Because we were focused on a specific task. We knew that we had between December 23rd and the 15th of January to get a job done. We worked, we got the job done, we made the report, and we continued the ongoing effort. Essentially, the Assembly is saying, you give us a project, we take it seriously. As a good example, our Names Council Task Force produced a report. Their commentary on the subject of constituencies was a trifle more than one paragraph, a little less than half a page. On the other hand, our own review working group put together a 75-page summary of the problem. We do take this seriously, and we know the board is looking for substantive work. We have shown that we can provide it, that we intend to provide it, and hopefully in cooperation with the Names Council. We hope that they decide to involve the General Assembly in their processes. But let's make it clear. Should they not decide to involve us, we will treat this as a point of failure and route around them. It is our job to respond to the board initiatives and to get the job done. Our board in Melbourne introduced two particular resolutions, 1.28, 1.29, dealing with improvements needed for the DNSO, dealing with the possibility of future structural changes. I'm proud of the contribution of our GA membership. We have people that even though their lists were shut down, their working groups were shut down, they still made an independent stance, created their own website, got together as a group, and put together formulations that were posted to the public forums. I'm very proud of that effort because we take the board seriously. This is something that needs to be done. We say we have a problem in this DNSO. We want to work on it. We have other achievements we'd like to point to. In the course of the last few months, we have created brand new lists. There is no longer only one list for the General Assembly. In addition to roots, we now have a list that deals with who is in privacy issues. We have a list that deals with our external relationships with organizations such as the at-large, such as the Names Council. Another list specifically for UDRP and trademark considerations. Another list again for internal procedural matters. And we have taken steps to correct some of our own problems, to resolve our decorum issues. We've now got, instead of one list monitor, an entire team devoted to try to calm down the noise and to get everybody focused on what we're supposed to be doing here. And yes, we've got several challenges that face us in the months ahead. I think that our biggest concern is that we need more cross-constituency dialogue. We need to expand our outreach. We need much, much greater participation in the process. We need to make sure the DNSO is properly structured or restructured to allow for full representation, and especially representation of individuals in the voting process. As a group, we believe that it's important to push for the immediate, if not sooner, election of the missing four at-large directors. We would like to cooperate with the at-large study group to expedite this process. Now, we've noticed comments, good comments made by Mr. Lin, especially his remarks to the Department of Commerce, that indicates that consensus on the at-large is still a vexing problem, still a matter that to some degree eludes the at-large study committee. Well, we would like to say that in the GA, you have that consensus-building mechanism. This is our job. You want consensus on the at-large, you put us to work. You convene a working group. Now, what does that mean? Our last working group, within 3 weeks, generated 1,500 comments. You go to the at-large study committee's forum right now, how many did you see? Perhaps 100? We can do a better job, a more forthright job. We are a resource. We would like to be used. We have a membership that is willing to commit its time, its expertise, its effort to these issues. I think that if we were to convene a working group to facilitate the work of the at-large city committee. This working group would, in fact, include the at-large directors, the former election candidates, the at-large community spokesmen that at the moment don't even have a seat on the ALSC committee. Now, we know the committee is doing its best. We know that the committee made a concerted effort to find people, groups with specific skill sets. We would like to point out that the General Assembly is a body that has a skill set at developing consensus. You want consensus? You need to know how to handle this? We're here. When we take a look at ICANN as an organization, we say to ourselves, it was founded for the purpose of privatizing what was essentially a governmental function for the public. And that as such, pretty much the legitimacy of this organization depends in a substantial part on having some public voice as an important part of the decision-making structure. We're here to say to you that the GA is part of that public voice. We are a group that is open to everyone. There's no fees. There's no cost to join. We are a group with an open mailing list, with people that are willing to communicate. We are as much the public as any other group. Now, if that voice is allowed to better participate, then we have empowerment. Empowerment confers legitimacy, and with empowerment comes collaboration. Collaboration across all stakeholder interests. As such, we can fulfill the promise of the public benefit corporation that ICANN is supposed to be. It begins with the public voice, which must be an equal partner in this ICANN process. Not one single issue should be passing out of this domain name supporting organization without the approval of the General Assembly. The public has a right to be involved and to have a say-so. We think it's time for a few minor amendments in our bylaws to ensure a greater voice for public interest. We look forward to the possibility of an increased role for the General Assembly in the restructured DNSO that awaits us. Now that the diatribe is out of the way, we're going to move on to the pleasant matters. I have next to me Elizabeth, our DNSO Secretariat, and we're going to move right along in the schedule. Elizabeth.
Good morning, everybody. I am Elizabeth Partenov. I'm working for AFMIC, and I am also providing the DNSO Secretariat services. And today, it is exactly 2 years I started to work on as a secretariat and providing the means for discussion and for dialogue and debate between all of us. The secretariat is a silent and reliable service allowing for work and nothing else. It's providing website, mail, archives, history in the making. It is just reliable service, the basis for all our dialogue and discussion. I prepared, please, Rebecca, would you mind please show the page exactly? Thank you very much. I don't see very well. I prepared the page with gathering all administration documents of the General Assembly of the DNSO, which is gathering all work done, all achievements done, and presenting history, records of our work. When the DNSO Secretariat started to work in June 1999, it started from scratch, and it started just with the goodwill, without rules, offering the first mailing list. Of course, it is necessary to establish rules, and it is very, very difficult in the open forum. Hopefully, in 2000, by the end of 1999, the General Assembly, the Names Council, elected first chair and alternate chair to General Assembly, Roberto Gaetano and Harald Alvestrand, and with the leadership of the two persons, the General Assembly people were able to establish several working rules providing for better working conditions. We have, the General Assembly has a voting registry, electorate well-defined, has voting rules, is able to vote on several issues, and actually the General Assembly, we had up to, as of today, 5 votes conducted according to 2 procedures, majority and instant rule of thought. I was very happy to work for 2 years for the DNSO, for the Secretariat and for General Assembly. I am the one considering that it is extremely important to have an open forum, the place anybody can join and be active participant as opposed to passive one. It is essential to have such a place, and it is extremely difficult to establish such a place. I believe very, very strongly it is precious, and it is something which is definitely needed within ICANN. DNSO, General Assembly of the DNSO, is the only place today within ICANN when anybody may join, when anybody may could discuss, express his view, and probably be listened, but there is still a lot of work to be done to be listened and to discuss substance. I wish you good luck, and I wish that you succeed to be better listened and to better participate in ICANN process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Harald, are you with us now?
I'm here. We have the usual brief technopause while we get the equipment connected together. Apologies to our assistants for not doing this earlier. I was asked to report on behalf of the List Monitoring Committee. Having been the List Monitoring Committee for a year, I suppose I can do that. I'm no longer the List Monitoring Committee. I'm now a member of the List Monitoring Committee. And I hope that I can get rid of that too. Wow.
Wow.
I'm so impressed every time this works. So, consider this musings from an outgoing member. Because we now have other volunteers manning this position. Briefly, the rules for the list are this. Be yourself, one person, one voice. You don't have to say who you are, but you have to be one person. Be polite, and don't post too much. That's the essence of the mailing list rules. Exactly what it means has been caused significant debate in the past. There are also some technical limitations of the list, like only subscribers can post to the list, you don't cross-post, and no matter whether you are allowed to post, you're not a member or whatever, postings are sent to a list of called GA Full, which is all messages, including all the spam, submitted to the GA list. Among other things, this allows anyone who cares to observe what the filtering rules actually do. A list monitor, according to the rules, is one or more persons who has the power to send out warnings, has the right to impose monitoring of posts, that is, that certain posts are looked at before they go to the list, and he may block members' posting rights for a limited period. Well, we generally have used the term 2 weeks, and if people repeatedly offend against the list rules, we increase. The current record is 64 weeks. There's a particular person. There's one person who enjoys making off-topic postings. Well, in the time from February 2000, I think that's right. Did I say that? I'm not sure. To November 2000, we had list rules that were imposed by fiat because we didn't have a voting mechanism, so we didn't have any other choice. We debated what the list rules should be and then said, okay, these are the rules. The chair says these are the rules. And I was moderator. There were a total of 11 actions taken against people suspending the posting rights. In November, we had actually managed to get rules for how to conduct the vote of the GA. So we took a vote and confirmed the mailing list rules. So then we had rules that had been confirmed by the membership, which I think is a good thing. But I kept on being the sole monitor. There were 5 actions in this period, which is a rather low number, in fact. And 2 of those were borderline, that is, Roberto disagreed with me when the decision was appealed, so the member got his posting rights back. The new chairs, when elected in March, requested more people on the monitoring committee. So we now have 5 people: Bruce James, Chris McKee, Alexander Svensson, Patrick Cordes, and me. Having a group is the procedures I had been using as a lonely person were no longer appropriate, and it took a little time to work this out. So we have now established a rough procedure which says that at least 2 of these people have to agree with before anything happens. And if you are complained against, or if you are a complainant, you're not supposed to be one of those two people. This is a good thing. But it took a while, and I simply let the complaints pile up in the period, which was a mistake, because the tone of the list grew severely more strident and abusive while we were waiting for the list monitoring system to be set up. And it's taking us some time to dig out back out of the hole. But we're back and making decisions. And I hope we will be able to make decisions rapidly. As an outgoing member, I'm entitled to behave as if I was a wise man and give sage advice to the people following me. Wow. If you want rough consensus, abusing your friends is not the best way to get it. So, rules for polite behavior are critical. One particular pattern that's very hard to deal with is people who are making statements that make it clear that they want to be abusive. For instance, one person referred almost consistently to one other person as crispy. It's quite hard to say that this is an offense that is worthy of being suspended from the list. But it's definitely not a behavior that leads to polite interaction and getting to rough consensus. So, when you're a list monitor, you have to be seen as fierce, and you have to be seen as quick. It's rather like raising children, in which the effectiveness of a response is much lower if the response is delivered after the original problem has been forgotten. And one of the things we have discovered that current technology is not able to make is a list that is unmonitored and has polite discourse. So, with these observations, good luck for the future.
Thank you, Harold. Thank you very much. Perhaps we can get another monitor just to spend another moment on the topic, and then we'll move on.
Well, good morning. I'm Alexander Swenson. I'm just new on the list monitor team, and well, I can generally just agree with what Harald said, that we are digging our way out of the hole, and I hope that especially during the time we are here in Stockholm, it will be not too much trouble in between, so that we can work from all the input we get here at the meeting and use it on the GA list and on the GA sublists. That will be the positive outcome, if that is possible.
All right, very good. Next on our schedule, let's see if we can find perhaps a representative from the Interim Coordinating Committee of the at-large membership. Would perhaps Hans be here, or any of our at-large directors that may wish to make a comment to the General Assembly? As I see no one answering the call, I think perhaps next we can try to see if we could get a comment from the NAIS study folks. Do we have perhaps Rob Courtney in the house? Anyone else from that association or group? Okay, very good. We're happy to have you up here, down there, wherever you feel most comfortable.
My name is Klaus Kleiman. I'm with the NAIS group. We have posted an interim report, which is at our website, NAIS.org, which goes through our preliminary
sort of observations and arguments about the at-large member question. We're holding a forum at 12 o'clock over at the hotel next door.
Good morning. My name is Izmia. I'm one of the 15-plus members of NAIS. We tried to come up about the team of people from NIS, stands for NGO and Academic ICANN Study. We sometimes call NICE. Sometimes we are not that nice. Anyway, we try to have every member, each region or I can designate a region to have each member. So we have people from Latin America, Valachvelia, and people from Africa, two of them, and people from Asia, Pacific, myself, and two other colleagues, a bunch of them from North America, and last but not least, there's several from Europe. Although we did some preliminary study, which is about 120 pages, which is now on the PDF on our site called naisproject.org. And I believe it's linked from the at-large study committee's official homepage as well. We came up with just interim reports, so we left out some of the major issues, such as the composition of the at-large director, whether we really need them, if so, why. And some of them we answered within the interim report, which we will report on this afternoon or starting 12 sharp in the Royal Star Hotel. But we also did a very substantial study on the election itself, the process of election in each region, what happened. And it's interesting that in a very general sense, we have some very good skeptical satisfaction. There are many problems we found, but it doesn't really give any fundamental question to the legitimacy of the elected board. So, yes, we have several problems. Some of may need to fix in the long term. Others, if we set some procedures and the systems correctly, may be fixed relatively easily. The biggest question perhaps thrown to us is where we started to look at the at-large membership, we thought that we should concentrate on the at-large membership and its election. But the more we thought about that, maybe it's not the case. If we are to change, say, some of the procedures of the election or the number of seats and say how many for global and how many for regional representation, that should be considered within the whole ICANN framework. It's a balance between that large and SOs. It's a balance about regional diversity. It's a balance about functional diversity between the users and a very specific set of functions and technical coordinations. So it's not that simple to just try to think things within the at large framework. And that's almost where we reached. We did have two-day full workshop or working group meeting in Melbourne, two-day in New York earlier this month, and yesterday we spent almost all of the time, but still we feel it's a vast, complex issue that we really, really need to spend our energy to have some more consensus. And with that, I'd like to invite you to come to the meeting on this noon on Star Hotel for about 1 hour. Thank you very much.
Thank you again, and I'd like to say that I took the time on the airplane. I read my way through 107 pages of this interim report, and so far it's a sensationally well done, well presented document, and you're to be commended for your efforts. Let's see what we have next on our agenda. I believe now is the time that we ask our fellow members in the constituencies to join us at the podium. We need your feedback. You've had your meetings. We want to hear what's going on. Now is the time to share with us. And I believe that perhaps we can start by asking the CCTLD representatives to first come up. We know you have some interesting news to convey.
How do we get
make yourself at home.
Good morning. My name is Faye Howard. As the European member of the Administrative Committee of the CCTLD constituency, I chaired a meeting over the past 2 days. Very pleased to announce that we had 130 participants from 41 different registries in most regions of the world. The items of business, briefly. We have finally appointed a permanent secretariat, which is going to be led by BK Kim. He has three staff, and we're very pleased to have them on board, and we wish them well in their work for us. We also thank the interim secretariat for the work they've been doing in the meantime. We have a best practice document for CCTLDs, which has been based on a number of efforts that we've individually been working on. Over the past few months, these documents have been put together in the effort to make one document. An informal vote had been taken on it, and there were still a few CCTLDs who couldn't sign up to it. In the attempt to get a sort of consensus document and to move on from this, some changes were worked upon during the meeting, and we think we may have been able to make the document more inclusive for some people who had problems. This document will be put to the CCTLD list for ratification and then hopefully published to the world. We also looked at the situation of CCTLDs in the DMSO. We had a small breakout work group to look at the possibilities of forming a separate CC support organization and giving notice to the DMSO. Again, this document has to be put to the list. There will be a statement to the ICANN meeting tomorrow. We've also mentioned it briefly to the GAC, and we hope to be able to give you full details of that in due course. A housekeeping item is that I will be leaving the CCTLD organization and my role in the ABCOM from the 7th of June. I will be replaced by Nigel Roberts from the Jersey and Guernsey registries. We also talked a lot about outreach. There has been a very successful meeting recently in Africa. We're very mindful of the fact that the CCTLDs that participate in both the meetings and in the list are limited. We're very, very keen to get more people on board. There's been a lot of work done in Asia, and I understand that there was a very successful meeting in Africa trying to bring in more people, make them aware of ICANN as well as the CCTLD constituency. We had a small meeting with the GAC yesterday at which we were allowed in for a little while. We mentioned outreach to the GAC because one of the things that has come to our attention is not only do the CCTLDs not all participate, but neither do the government members, and we did ask them to do some work to make sure that there is education of government representatives in other countries, because the ignorance is sometimes not so good for CCTLDs and the internet matters. I think that's about it, really. Thank you.
Thank you. Teresa, I see you're up here. Go right ahead.
Commercial is next. Hi, I'm Teresa Swinehart. I'm one of the three business constituency representatives, along with Philip Shepherd and Grant. The business constituency met yesterday and had a rather full agenda, which I'll sort of run through quickly, and then it prepared a statement which is still in draft form, which I'll read to you on an issue that is important to the business constituency. It had a presentation from TUCAS on its privacy initiative, and there was some discussion on that. It discussed the WIPO second proceedings that are occurring right now and what action items it would like to take on that. There was a brief discussion on the who is issue. We received presentations from or discussions from .biz.info and .name, and had the opportunity to have some discussions on that. We had a presentation by Patrick Falstrom on the multiple DNS root issue, and there was a lot of debate within the business constituency on that, and that's the item to which we have a statement to make. We then went into closed session and discussed housekeeping items, secretariat, budget, various other things of that sort. And that was basically it. So I'm now going to read you the draft statement, and please note it's still in draft form. When it's final, we will submit it for the record. The statement is, the business constituency applauds the development of competition in the domain name system. However, it notes that the confusion between naming schemes and threats to the uniqueness of the DNS pose a severe threat to the stability of the domain name system and thereby to all users of the infrastructure worldwide. Businesses require unique, consistent, and reliable means of ensuring communications. The business constituency notes that only with uniqueness can users, businesses, consumers be assured the ability to communicate consistently and reliably with anyone, anywhere. Stability of the infrastructure is essential to all, whether business, consumers, nonprofit organizations, educational institutions, etc. It is a social responsibility. Competition on, among other things, registration services in the domain name system, namespace, must be supported via mechanisms such as a registry, registrar model, which ensure choice to the registrant, choice of registrar, while guaranteeing global uniqueness. In conclusion, the business constituency encourages and supports ICANN to be active in taking measures to ensure competition while maintaining global uniqueness. Once that's finalized and the last parts have been tweaked from the business constituency, it will be submitted for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Teresa. Next up at bat, we have the GTLDs.
Good morning. I'm Chuck Gomes from VeriSign Global Registry Services. It was a historic day yesterday for the registry constituency. It's the first time we had a meeting with more than one member. I can tell you that all three current active members were present. That's Afilias, New Level, and VeriSign. And the prospective members that hopefully will be members within the next few months were also in attendance. Had an attendance of a little over 35 people. An election for chair was held, and I was elected to an interim chair position for the first 6 months during the transition period. We formed two committees, a finance committee and communications committee, that will begin work immediately. And we passed a resolution that will be submitted this afternoon to the Names Council. I won't go into that now since that will be part of that meeting. And then each of the eight registry operators presented a status report in terms of where they were at in their process. And that was followed by a general question and answer period. Thank you.
All right, good. We'll look forward to the statement later today. Next, from the ISPs. Here we are.
Tony Holmes from the ISPCP. The ISPCP met yesterday morning with a very full agenda, and the meeting was split into two parts. We had an open session where we wanted to share the benefits from a number of presentations with the wider community, and a closed session which was limited to members only to deal with the focused ISP issues. We had a number of presentations during the open session, an update by New Level on their rollout program for .biz from the European Commission representatives on the current status and progress towards the introduction of .eu, and a presentation from new.net. We also had a really excellent overview of the DNS from Nominum, which highlighted some of the key issues both ISPs and others need to be well aware of. The closed session included feedback and some discussion on recent developments concerning Enum, both from a US and from a European perspective, and this is seen as a major issue that's likely to impact all ISPs. And there was an update of the status and progress of WHOIS as well. In addition to that, the ISPs would like to endorse the statement that's just been read out by the BC on competition in the domain name space, and to add one additional point on behalf of the ISPs to that statement. And that is that business models which potentially cause conflicts or collision or instability in the DNS namespace create uncompensated costs in the technical and customer support areas for ISPs. And the ISPs firmly believe that this needs to be taken into consideration in any discussion of alternative routes.
Thank you. Milton, I believe you're up next.
Good morning, everybody. The non-commercial constituency had a very productive meeting. One of the first things and most important things that we did was to pass a new membership structure, which requires our member organizations to pay fees unless they're specifically exempted from the requirement by the ADCOM. This is part of a long process of getting our financial house in order. We also discussed some of our fundraising tactics and strategies to deal with the DNSO dues, which we are expected to pay. It's still a great deal of ambiguity surrounding that topic, but we are committed to doing what we can in that area. Of course, we had our members giving reports from the Names Council and a lot of concern in our constituency about some of the issues that you were talking about this morning, Danny, about the lack of a defined process for moving from these committees on the Names Council to working groups or whatever it is we end up with, although we did not pass a resolution on that specifically. We did pass resolutions on five topics. I'd like to briefly indicate what all of them are. First of all, we addressed the UDRP. We know that there's a review of the UDRP process going through. We passed as policy advice to the Names Council a set of recommendations, one of which is that there be a time limit on challenges, that if you've held a name continuously for 3 years, that you should be exempted from challenges under the UDRP, although of course not under the courts. We took note of the problem of forum shopping within the UDRP procedure. Forum shopping is a process by which complainants get to choose who decides their case, and therefore there is an incentive for dispute resolution service providers to be more complainant-friendly than perhaps is warranted. We made two suggestions, and they're only suggestions, as to how the policy modifications might be made to address that problem. One of them is to give respondents a kind of a declaratory judgment option, which would allow them to initiate a claim saying that they have a right or legitimate interest in a name. The other is a concept of having registrars select the dispute resolution service provider for all of their customers on a one-time basis, not on a case-by-case basis, so that registrars, since consumers can move from registrar to registrar if consumers feel that they are not getting a fair deal from a particular dispute resolution service provider, they could possibly move to another registrar that uses a different one. Again, we're recommending that those ideas be explored, not that we necessarily endorse them. We also noted, took note of the WIPO 2 process, and we wanted to make a very strong point that we oppose any extension of the UDRP to new rights in names until we have gotten the existing UDRP right, which we don't have right now. And we are very concerned about assigning domain names with too much regulatory baggage and that actually decreasing the stability of the Internet, that touchstone of policy advice in ICANN, the stability of the Internet. That is, if your ability to hold a domain name is constantly shifting and the right to a name is constantly shifting, we don't think that's a very stable situation. The final point on the UDRP is there is some doubt, at least within the U.S., about the ability of people who lose UDRP cases to reclaim the name in the courts. There is some serious doubt about that. And since the UDRP was drafted with the notion that you would have recourse to the courts, this is something that has to be taken note of. Other resolutions. We passed a resolution endorsing the idea of an individual domain name owner's constituency. We passed a very complicated resolution on country code top-level domains. There are two points here. One of them is that members of ours in developing countries feel that they need advice, both technical and policy advice, about how to operate country code top-level domains, and they are seeking assistance. There is concern about the delegation process, particularly one of the members in the Philippines is concerned about .ph, and there's a paragraph in there about that. And finally, a more fundamental point about the role of country codes in the DNSO was raised, which seems to have been sort of addressed by the country code organization themselves. The thrust of this part of the resolution was that the contracts between the country codes and the ICANN is in fact a policy matter, and if the country codes are part of the DNSO, then those contracts should go through the DNSO policy process and not be individually negotiated. Now, of course, that would not apply if, in fact, the country codes are no longer in the DNSO and form their own supporting organization. We also passed a resolution critical of the ICANN budget for this year because it did not include money for the at-large election and because it did not include money for translation services with respect to ICANN's activities. Let's see. I think that's pretty much it. We heard reports from .biz, from various board members, and from Kathy Kleiman regarding the WIPO2 process. Thank you.
Thank you. And now from the registrar's community.
Are you on, Mike?
Thank you. Mike Lee from the registrar constituency. We had a very well-attended meeting yesterday, probably one of the biggest turnouts we've had since the inception of the constituency. It was a very productive meeting. The first item of business was the adoption of the bylaws, revised bylaws, that provides for new elected positions within the constituency. We set forth a time frame over the next month to elect these new positions. Also, one of the other items of business was Joe Sims attended the registrar meeting and gave, a summary of the finalized contracts that were entered into by ICANN, the Department of Commerce, and VeriSign. He explained some of the differences which occurred in the contracts as they were originally proposed in Melbourne and very graciously answered any questions that was provided to him. One of the more contentious items that was discussed during the constituency was the concern about unauthorized transfers among registrars or slamming. And the issue was discussed, and the registrars are going to have a follow-up meeting here in Stockholm to address this issue. The mandate of the group is to address three specific issues, which deal with clearing up ambiguities in the current contracts, stability, and consumer confidence. So this is one of the mandates that the registrars will be looking at. One of the other topics that we discussed was the current ICANN budget. According to ICANN bylaws, there is the need for a approval by registrars having two-thirds of the current market. As a result of competition in the marketplace, VeriSign no longer has a two-thirds market share. So it was discussed within the constituency and with Louis Tuton how we would go about getting the approval. It was discussed that a standard letter would be sent out to all ICANN accredited registrars to sign, and at which time that registrars accounting for two-thirds of the market signed off, that would be the approval that would need to be comply with the existing bylaws. We had a presentation from the new registry, Affilius, New Level, Global Name Registry, and Registry Pro, giving us an update and answering any questions that we had. And we also had a brief discussion on the Who Is Task Force and some of the EU privacy concerns that are sort of looming out there. Thank you.
Thank you. And now I think we're on to the intellectual property constituency. Hi, YJ. Is your mic working yet?
Yes, actually, I would like to update a little bit about our like resolution regarding CCTLD. Ben, could you go back a little bit about the CCTLD resolution? Yeah, over there, I don't think you updated like that contract process should go through like a DNSO, like consultation process. I think you missed that part. And also, I think like Milton didn't make a report about the consultation with local internet community. Could you write that? Yeah, thank you. And also like the DNSO process, because I think that should be recorded properly.
Sorry, Marjorie, I didn't want to have to read the whole resolution, but...
Actually, you mentioned the DNSO process. I mean, that contract should, like, go through DNSO consultation process, but I don't think that was recorded there. And I see this morning a lot of issues are not properly recorded in this, like, through this subscriber process. So I just wanted to make sure during, like... your sort of like presentation or whatever speech, there was also many cases like this. So I just wanted to make sure you recorded properly. Thank you.
Thank you, YJ. I think now we're ready for the intellectual property constituency.
Am I on?
Ben, do we have connectivity over here?
I'll just use this. I'm J. Scott Evans. I am Executive Vice President of the Intellectual Property Constituency. We had a very good meeting yesterday. It was a meeting in which we didn't conduct a tremendous amount of administrative business. It was a time we met together to inform ourselves on issues that are taking place within the internet community. We had a report from, as many of you may or may not know, the Intellectual Property Constituency is assisting in sponsoring a study of the Uniform Dispute Resolution Policy by the Max Planck Institute, which is a think tank. And we had the presentation from their representative on the raw data that has been collected with regard to that particular study. It is our hope that that's data will be processed, and then a report will be issued by Montevideo.
Oh, that'd be great.
We also had a presentation from Dr. Willie Black with regard to the dispute resolution policy that they are developing for Nominet, and we heard their rationale for why they believe they've made the choices they have made, and also their hope that it can serve as perhaps a starting point for many other of the CCCLDs as they grapple with whether they will have a DRP, and if so, what form it will take. Then we also had a report for some administrative things, a few things we did. When we were in San Francisco, we had an IPC meeting the May 10th, and at that time we decided that we needed to inform intellectual property owners of the intellectual property protections that are available in the two TLDs that are slotted to go live first. So we have posted frequently asked questions on the IPC website. Those have been posted in English, Arabic, Italian, and Spanish. And yesterday we solicited volunteers to get Chinese, French, Japanese, and Korean. So we will hope to have those up that will assist potential applicants and or registrants with the information they need for how the IP claim service works and how the sunrise period works, what ramifications those have, and we're hoping to add to that some information we learned yesterday regarding the random assignment of names by affiliates, because we think that there's a lot of misunderstanding within just the general community about how this is going to work technically. And we just want to make sure everyone is on the same page. We had presentations from representatives from .biz, .info, .pro, and .name, and they let us know what the status was with their particular a project. We also had a report read into the record from Steve Metalitz regarding who is, and at that time we noted that the who is committee is opening their comment period, I believe, on the questionnaire on Wednesday, and we informed our members that they need to take a look at that and get comments in so that Paul and his committee can have a report ready for Montevideo. We discussed CCTLD best practices, and then we went into a discussion of alternative routes, in which we pointed out to our members that Grant Forsyth had put together a very short, concise paper, and Stuart Lynn had done a more comprehensive, technically savvy paper. And we had some discussion about those particular papers. Although the intellectual property constituency at this point has no formal position with regard to alternative route, there was a sense of consensus in my mind that the intellectual property owners are concerned with stability of the internet from a technical standpoint and also from a commercial and consumer confidence standpoint, and that we are concerned that alternate or alternative routes can threaten both of those aspects of the internet. And while it is not necessarily an intellectual property issue, it is something that we are quite cognizant of. And we will be looking into those issues and deciding whether we want to have any position at all. We had a financial report. We discussed international domain names. We are putting together a committee, hopefully, of users of this particular service from various countries that can assist us on evaluating the practicality of the system and the user-friendliness of the system. And then we decided tentatively that we are going to try to have an intellectual property constituency meeting right before the Montevideo meeting in Buenos Aires, Argentina, because one, we hope to bring a lot of the Latin American bar to a large city and get them involved and informed on issues. And it's our understanding that a lot of the plane flights will be changing in Buenos Aires, so it's a nice spot to get people to converge in one particular area. And then we concluded our meeting.
Yeah. That's great. Thank you. Right now, I'm moving on to what I would think would be a fairly interesting segment. In Melbourne.
Oh, yes, please.
I'd like to ask a question of Milton Non-Commercial Domain Names Constituency about your resolution about CCTLDs. I'm wondering if you can expand a little bit on why you feel any technical assistance.
Why we feel we need
technical assistance? We feel that CCTLDs need help and technical assistance.
The request, the proposal was made by somebody associated, I think, with the CCTLD in, where is Zakaria? In what country is he from? Egypt, is it? Or?
Mauritania?
Mauritania, yes. It was a small developing country, and the motion was seconded by some other representatives of ours in small developing countries. It's not a subject I really know a lot about, and we've had some debate about whether we should even be addressing this issue. The resolution was vague in the sense that it called for the formation of a body to provide this assistance. The people who proposed it were unable to specify what kind of a body, and deliberately so. You should view it as kind of a general sense, which I think is valid, that there are people out there in small developing countries who feel that they need both technical and policy assistance, such as in operations and domain name disputes, to enhance CCTLD registries in developing countries.
just to put a bit of light on that, so I think really it's a qualified message that some of the developing countries need technical assistance rather than the CCTLDs in general.
Oh, yes.
It's a very valid point. It's a very valid point, and one which the CCTLDs are aware of, and I know that to some degree there's a lot of offer of help out there from the more developed registries to give assistance to the less developed, and maybe that is something for the people who have concerns to take up in the CCTLD constituency. And we're very willing to listen and help, and I know there's a lot of the larger registries out there very willing to help.
All right. Have we other comments on this topic?
YJ, did you want to add anything to this?
All right, then. Perhaps we could have up on the screen resolution 01.28. Let's see, where is this now? If you would, why don't you have a seat for a minute? We'll chat about this. This involves all of you. What we're dealing with here is the fact that in Melbourne, our board came up with a resolution. That particular resolution asked us essentially to come up with proposals, recommendations to either improve the DNSO as it's constituted today or to look at the possibility of structural changes. And I wanted to start the discussion simply by asking different constituency representatives within your own groups, have you discussed this issue? Obviously, we've got clear indication this morning from our startup constituency, the CCTLD, that in fact this has been a matter of considerable discussion. With respect to the other constituencies, how have all of you addressed this particular board resolution? And do we have that up on the board yet? We don't.
The reason that the resolution is not coming up is apparently because there's a major cable fault between the U.S. East Coast and Sweden. We get traffic through, but it's severely overloaded. I have no idea what's happening.
Chuck, maybe you'd like to start this off?
Sure. Let me say, first of all, that our constituency has not not specifically discuss this, primary reason being that we're very newly formed in terms of the expanded membership. Let me comment, though, from the point of view of being a member of the Names Council Budget Committee. Most everyone is aware that nearly a year ago, VeriSign offered $100,000 in matching funds for the very purpose of hiring full-time staff that would focus on policy and even addressing some of the same concerns that Milton's shared with regard to the non-commercial domain name constituency with regard to process. It has taken a long time to move that forward. I can say that we're getting close to where we think we can start the fundraising so that the matching funds can be collected. But the purpose, I think, is to really deal with the whole process issue that many of us believe, and I think most of the Names Council members believe, is serious in need of work. But understanding that all the Names Council members are volunteers, as are the other people here, in terms of this particular effort, and they have full-time jobs, we realize that it's very difficult to take a huge task like this on and really bring it to some kind of closure without some full-time assistance, and that's the purpose of that plan. So certainly from the work that we've done in the Budget Committee and that I think that the Names Council has been supporting to date, that's what the focus is, and I expect in the next couple months that that will start to come to fruition.
Other possible comments? Milton, you look like you had thought.
Well, I finally read the resolution that you're referring to. Yes, proposals that improve operations, there is a call for professionalism. The big issue for us has been one of money. Where does it come from? As a constituency, we do not make money on domain names. Therefore, it's very difficult to ask our members to contribute the kinds of, make the kinds of contributions that are expected of us, simply because their interest in domain names is more a general policy interest and not a financial interest. And therefore, for them to allocate $300 or $500 or $1,000 to an organization in which they have a 1/7 representation, it's a pretty hard sell. Not that we can't do it in a few cases, but we are not, again, a well-organized business lobby like the IP interests or some of the other groups. We are not a homogeneous group. We're extremely heterogeneous. It's an extremely difficult organizational problem for us to be expected to come up with $30,000 in 6 months, which is what we're being asked to do. We have asked the Names Council for some kind of a lower amount to be expected, and this was repudiated. So that's the one issue. The structure, I think, is even more important, but probably hopeless. We certainly have discussed this. If we want to feel depressed and perhaps suicidal, we can talk about it at length. But the structure of the DNSO is, in our view, gerrymandered in order to magnify the power of certain interests. Just looking at it as a political scientist, there is a block which has almost a consistent and unbreakable control of the Names Council. The only thing that can break that block is issues involving VeriSign. which will make the registrar constituency go the other way. Other than that, there is total consistency, as we've seen in the discussion of alternate routes today. It's just everybody marching in lockstep. So that there are serious, I mean, serious activists within our constituency who are coming to me and saying, should we even be in this game? Should we even be involved? And I cannot give them a good answer other than we don't want to make it too easy for the rest of them to simply have their way and not have our interests represented. What is there to say other than that? I mean, it's all arithmetic. You know, how many votes are there? Where do those votes come from? Whose interests do they represent? You look at the level of overlap in the interest between the registrar and registry constituency now that you know, we have new TLDs. In some ways, the situation gets worse, although I think they made some very good decisions in terms of who they selected for their first three members. That was actually nice to see. Thank you. But if the CCTLDs pull out of the DNSO, it's going to be a pretty ridiculous situation. There's simply no... We will be a voice, but we will not be...
You won't be a voting voice, is what you're saying.
We will, yeah.
All right, obviously, if the CCTLD is withdraw as a constituency, that means that accordingly the financial burden on each of the remaining constituencies increases accordingly. Teresa, I wanted to ask with regard to business constituency thoughts. I know that in the General Assembly, comments have been made by some of our members looking for a perhaps greater role for small business that accounts for perhaps 70% of all domain name registrations. People have been saying, why in fact don't we have a separate small business constituency when we can see that our current business constituency seems to be relatively aligned with intellectual property interests, pretty much to the degree that you might call them two sides of the same coin? Should we, in fact, be looking for some type of structural separation? I'm just wondering whether your constituency has thought about the those aspects.
Yeah, actually, we had a very short, not very short, but we had a discussion with regards to SMEs in the closed session when we were discussing the budget. The budget is accommodated such to encourage SME participation. There's a very low fee. I mean, it's just a threshold issue.
And I'd like to thank you for that as one of these small SMEs myself.
Yes, and that's been there since the beginning. That's important that people realize that the business constituency has always been structured in order to really encourage and allow for the single person business, things of that sort, that there is participation. What we did discuss and noted was that while we have this, the participation of SMEs has been rather low. And I mean, as people noted, if you're a small business, you don't have a whole lot of time to do much more than deal with the bottom line. And that issues such as those discussed within sort of the ICANN process, while important, may not be possible to focus attention on at that time because of staffing or revenue or other issues.
How much, by the way, are you currently, what's the rate for the small business in your constituency?
I would have to check. I don't recall it on the top of my head. But does somebody remember? Thank you. Thanks, I was drawing a blank on that. So that would be for the small business. So what we did talk about was outreach efforts. We have been working with the small business associations, and we're trying to identify the ones in other parts of the world that we could encourage to participate and maybe disseminate participation that way. And just to encourage businesses to participate. The real problem is, again, how much time they have. And finding a mechanism by which to make that easier are things that we would like to hear. That all the structure and the mechanisms are in place, that it's there. It's just a matter of encouraging more small businesses to participate and making it easier for them to do it.
All right, good. So it's next time that we have this get together, I guess we'll look forward to seeing increased membership on your rosters.
Yeah, I mean, I would encourage you as a small business and others who are small businesses to actually participate and to seek to join. We can do the outreach, and we can certainly make a structure where it's feasible to join and try to make it as simple as possible. We have a mailing list, and everything is either posted there or it's posted up on the website. So we've sought to make it as easy as possible for anybody to really participate, but there's also responsibility on small businesses who are interested in participating to A, join, and then B, participate. Nobody can force people to participate. Mm-hmm. So while we do have a lot of members, the responsibility really then lies with the membership. So I do want to point that out. The two other issues I did want to just discuss, that we have been following the DNSO review process. The constituency did participate in the DNSO review itself, and we are now following the Names Council work on the next steps, which will be emerging from the terms of reference, which many of which are part of the overall business plan of the Names Council. So those are my points.
All right, good. I guess the major question that I would like to see addressed is, if enough of us seem to think we've got some real problems here, how do we move forward to finding results? What's the best way? Are we turning over this particular mission of structural improvements, of improvements to the DNSO, of improvements to perhaps funding considerations, to others to look at? Are we solving it internally? I'm hearing Milton saying his constituency is having a real problem raising funds, and that if his constituency doesn't have funds, that under the current resolutions put forth by the Names Council, they are at risk of losing their vote. Is that essentially correct?
Yeah. I'm not a member of the Names Council, but having been active on the Budget Committee for the Names Council, I don't think we have to assume that it's a dead issue. Obviously, the Names Council members have to make any decisions there, but I certainly would encourage the non-commercial domain name holders constituency to, if in fact their efforts, and there have been some very serious efforts going on to deal with this problem on their part, that they go back to the Names Council.
All right, and I'm assuming we'll find out a lot more about this $100,000 in matching funds solicitation program as time goes by.
Yes, in fact, we're hoping, and it'll be a tough
probably a topic that will be at least briefly addressed in the Names Council meeting this afternoon, because we had a budget committee meeting this morning, that we should be very close. One of the last hurdles we needed to arrange was finalized this week. And so you'll probably hear something in the Names Council meeting this morning in terms of the start of the program for doing that.
All right. We're pretty close to the time that we were originally scheduled to take a break, so let's take a break. Join us back in another 20 minutes. We look forward to seeing you again.
Jealousy can lift me up if she's got
was in another lifetime, full of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. And if I pass this way again, you can rest assured I'll always do my best for her, on that I give my word. In a world of steel and death and men who are fighting to be warm, come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Not a word was spoke between us, there was a little risk involved. Everything up to that point had been left unresolved. Try imagining a place where it's always safe and warm. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. I was burned out from exhaustion, buried in the hail, poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail. Hunted like a crocodile, ravaged in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Suddenly I turned around and she was standing there, with silver bracelets on her wrists and flowers in her hair. She walked up to me so gracefully and took my crown of thorns. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Now there's a wall between us, something that's been lost. I took too much for granted, I got my signals crossed. Just to think that it all began on an uneventful morn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Well, the deputy walks on hard nails and the preacher rides the mount. But nothing really matters much, it's doom alone that counts. And the one-eyed undertaker, he blows a feudal horn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. I heard newborn babies wailing like a mourning dove, and old men with broken teeth stranded without love. Do I understand your question, man? Is it hopeless and forlorn? Some inches said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. In a little hilltop village, they gambled for my clothes. I bargained for salvation and she gave me a lethal dose. I offered up my innocence, got repaid with scorn. Come in, she said, I'll give you a shelter from the storm. I'm living in a foreign country, but I'm bound to cross the line. Beauty walks the razor's edge, someday I'll make it mine. If I could only turn back the clock to the God in her were born. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. was in another lifetime, full of toil and blood. When blackness was a virtue, the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. And if I pass this way again, you can rest assured I'll always do my best for her, on that I give my word. In a world of steel and death and misery, I'm fighting to be warm. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm. Not a word was spoke between us, there was a little risk involved. Everything up to that point had been left unresolved. Try imagining a place where the soul is safe and warm. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. I was burned out from exhaustion, buried in the hail. Poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail. Hunted like a crocodile, rabbit in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm. Suddenly I turned around and she was standing there, with silver bracelets on her wrists and flowers in her hair. She walked up to me so gracefully and took my crown of thorns. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Now there's a wall between us, something that's been lost. I took too much for granted, I got my signals crossed. Just to think that it all began on an uneventful morn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Well, the deputy walks on hard nails and the preacher rides a mount. But nothing really matters much, it's doom alone that counts. And the one-eyed undertaker, he blows a feudal horn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. I've heard newborn babies wailing like a mourning dove. And old men with broken teeth, stranded without love. Do I understand your question then? Is it hopeless and forlorn? Some inches said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm. In a little hilltop village, they gambled for my clothes. I bargained for salvation and she gave me a lethal dose. I offered up my innocence, got repaid with thorns. Come in, she said, I'll give you a shelter from the storm. I'm living in a foreign country, but I'm bound to cross the line. Beauty walks the razor's edge, someday I'll make it mine. If I could only turn back the clock to God and her alone. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
All right, I think some of us are back. We're making a slight change in the itinerary. Instead of moving directly onto the open forum section, we have the benefit now of hearing our featured guest speakers for the day. With us, we have David Johnson, who will be speaking on why a General Assembly matters. Also, and we are very proud to have her here, Ms. Esther Dyson, former chair and currently on the at-large study committee, who will be speaking to us on, well, you'll be letting us know.
On behalf.
There we go. I believe David is going to start it off.
Thank you, Danny. This room represents a collision between previously separate worlds, technologists, trademark lawyers, big businesses, entrepreneurs, nonprofits, and academics. The question presented is whether that collision will produce a destructive explosion or instead cross-fertilization and a new emergent form of order for a global medium. To ask whether the General Assembly matters and why is to ask what is the General Assembly and also, inescapably, what is the Names Council, the DNSO, and the ICANN board. The original idea of the General Assembly was that of a body with no barriers to entry, reflecting all of the stakeholders that might know enough or care enough to come together to discuss domain name policy. It was not just a constituency of last resort for the disaffected whose interests were not reflected in a formal designation of constituency status by the ICANN board. It was everyone involved in domain name policy, all the constituencies and everyone else. Indeed, the Paris draft model would allow constituencies to freely form, thereby providing flexible assurance that all stakeholders had a voice. It didn't itself select Names Council members, that was left to organized constituencies, but that wasn't viewed as particularly significant because the Names Council was just a steering committee, not a top-down legislative body. It nominated rather than directly electing candidates for the ICANN board, but again, even selection of ICANN board members to represent the DNSO was not viewed as that significant, because the board could only act, except in emergencies, based on recommendations reflecting a documented consensus among impacted stakeholders, resulting from a process that was hoped to occur within the General Assembly itself. So, from the outset, the General Assembly has been the most important and, unfortunately, also the least effective institution in ICANN. What does this concept of documented consensus, where does this concept of documented consensus come from, and why is it important? Well, when you think about it hard enough, it becomes clear that documented consensus among impacted stakeholders is the only possible source of legitimacy for ICANN and the only source of power it can exercise other than the hold-up power to make new applicants for a registry or registrar contracts agree to anything at all as a condition for entering into business, not exactly a legitimate source of power. Let me explain. ICANN's power and core mission comes from just two pages of the new and old GTLD contracts. How many of you have read this document? This is the .info GTLD contract. Look carefully at section 4.11 and 4.31. Every registry and registrar must promise to comply with consensus policies, and these must be demonstrated by not only action of the board and a recommendation of the Names Council, but also by a written report. Now, the word consensus has been abused a lot, and some think of it as a fuzzy-minded concept. It certainly does not mean a sense of consensus in my mind, even if the mind in question is that of a board member. But what it means is that almost everyone substantially impacted by a policy is willing to go along with it, and that opposition is so minor or irrational or limited to those without a substantial stake that it can be justifiably overridden. Consensus is something that has to be assessed in the context of a particular policy and a particular set of stakeholders, but it is a very concrete idea, and it certainly will be tested in very concrete cases as the independent review panel decides whether any particular attempt to enforce a policy against reluctant registries or registrars is supportable under this key contractual language. It's a deal that makes sense. It's the only deal that makes sense. No registry or registrar business would ever willingly or rationally agree to do whatever a future names council or ICANN board, however elected, might decide. No impacted party would willingly or rationally agree to be bound to comply with unknown future policies just because, or even if, they were developed in a transparent and open process, or just because they were supported by alleged experts. The power of ICANN comes from this very simple contract. The legitimacy of ICANN also comes from this contract, because those who are bound to follow ICANN policies have agreed not to oppose those most most impacted parties can go along with. ICANN can claim that there is a good fit, a congruence between those who make the rules and those who are impacted by them. It doesn't have to claim to be a democratically elected world government. It doesn't have to claim to be expert about the non-technical policy matters it regularly decides. It simply has to base its policies on a clear showing that those bound by and impacted by them are willing, at least grudgingly, to go along. And most importantly, it doesn't have to make centralized policy at all unless there is a general agreement that there is a need for centralized policy. So the concept of consensus provides a good answer to the key question whether we should seek central control and when we should allow decentralization and diversity and market competition. Now, you'll notice that there is only one actual consensus policy currently mentioned in the contracts, and that's the UDRP, sort of a grandfathered deal that was worked out before the full mechanism for development of consensus policies and enforcing them via contracts had itself been worked out. That might reflect the lack of any need for policies, even on the minimum standards needed to protect interoperability of the domain name system. But actually, more accurately, it reflects a lack of work by those in this room to engage in the true dialogue needed to find commonly agreeable policy solutions to some real problems. I said that a General Assembly is important, but I didn't say it wasn't broken. So the question we all have to ask ourselves today is, are we going to give up on the whole idea of consensus policies? Does the recent decision by the CCPLD suggest that we'll have a whole new set of supporting organizations with every interest group powerful enough to insist on getting an SO will whisper directly in the board's ear, producing an ICANN board that acts like a global legislature? We are clearly on the cusp of a major institutional decision. But before you turn the General Assembly into just another constituency, albeit for that underrepresented group of individual domain name holders, and before you throw it out altogether in favor of an at-large membership, no matter how openly formed and interactive, and before you give up on the idea of consensus policies, consider the consequences. There is no way the governments of the world will allow ICANN to pretend to be the regulator of the domain name system based solely on the fact that its board consists of good and smart people, or based solely on the fact that its meetings are open, or even based on the possible but unlikely fact that its board is elected by global democratic means. There is no way that the registries or registrars or anyone else, for that matter, will agree to follow any and all policies any future board of ICANN may adopt. It's just not a social contract anyone would accept, unless they thought they could control most of the seats, which would be a long-term delusion even for the presently powerful factions. And without any contractual or other power to simply force its policies down on others, ICANN has neither power nor legitimacy. And this bold effort to keep the global internet out of the clutches of stifling local governmental regulation will surely fail. So I challenge you to do three very important things while you are assembled in this most important body of ICANN, this General Assembly. First, create a consensus policy on something, anything. I think it could be one reflecting the need for a minor mid-course correction in the UDRP. We need a real specimen to show that the collection of all impacted parties meeting through the ICANN process and talking together, not just waiting for the board or staff to make top-down decisions, can agree on something, and that all can agree to be bound to go along with that something, even if they individually lack enthusiasm, precisely because they mostly all agree on it. Two, encourage the board to establish a thin ICANN, one that sets minimum standards on issues that really matter to interoperability and then gets out of the way. A thick ICANN, one that purports to be the sole semantic gardener of the namespace, will face irresistible and unsatisfiable demands that it become legitimate by somehow getting elected to represent all the parties in the world who might be impacted by decisions about what strings, what business models, what business terms are to be allowed. We just can't collectively manufacture that amount of power or legitimacy. In contrast, a thin ICANN will not claim to be the sole gardener. It will be more like a trellis that allows many different kinds of plants to grow and prosper, allowing users ultimately to make the choice of which to enjoy. Number three, watch closely when the Names Council meets this afternoon and when the board meets tomorrow and the next day, and ask yourself whether the Names Council is behaving like the steering committee it's supposed to be. Ask yourself whether the board is trying to foster the development of real consensus policies or reserving to itself the right and duty to make policy based on their own judgment, to be sure the best judgment of dedicated contributors, as if they had been elected to serve as a deliberative legislature on everyone's behalf. If they show these understandable tendencies to think they don't have to demonstrate consensus by means of a documented process that occurs in discussions among stakeholders, remind them and yourself about what the contract, the only source of ICANN's power or legitimacy, says. The consensus policies that the General Assembly could create would be valuable things indeed, even if few in number. In a democracy, when you have a disagreement, you count votes, hopefully accurately. In a consensus-based system, in the face of disagreement, you must begin a direct dialogue among the impacted parties. And that's the kind of process that lets everyone concerned find the highest ground. Even if we all split up into separate supporting organizations or differing types of members, we'll still face the key question, do we want to try to talk together as a group to find commonly acceptable solutions? So even if we abolish the DNSO and the General Assembly altogether, we would have to reinvent them. Because given the collision of the worlds I talked about at the beginning, there's no way we can have any power or legitimacy unless we get the consent of the governed. In cyberspace, it turns out that the social contract is a real contract, making people promise not unreasonably to oppose the shared views of similarly impacted parties, and requiring all of us to collaborate in working groups and task forces, to deliberate together, and to reach out to everyone who isn't here until we can find and document solutions to problems that need centralized solutions upon which most everyone can agree. We really can't succeed if we go into seat claiming and power brokering mode. We really can't legitimately dodge this duty by purporting to elect a set of representatives to do that deliberation on our own behalf. Because those who don't like the resulting rules will always be able to claim that they were excluded, and more importantly, will be able to avoid any duty to comply. The General Assembly has always been envisioned as the only place where we can make the specifics of that shared contract real. So don't give up on it. Don't give up on the ideal of real consensus policymaking. It's the only legitimate social contract we have or are likely to get. It's a long-term relationship contract that we all must constantly work to modify and adapt over time. And it's time we started to do just that. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. That was wonderful. And mine is going to be something much closer to random comments. First, I want to thank you, Danny, and everybody for the opportunity to talk here briefly. I'm here as an individual. I was former founding chairman of ICANN, so I have a lot of perspectives. I'm also here as a member of the at-large study committee, but I am not speaking for them. Their chairman is Carl Bildt, and he'll be speaking for it later. But I am unofficially going to report to you a little bit on what's happening, what's going on there. Then I'm going to give you a couple of my own views, and then David and I are both going to answer questions or discuss or whatever. And first, where is the at-large study committee? We have not come to conclusions. We have not made any decisions. We're trying to collect input. We're collecting a lot of various kinds of reports. Many of these reports you see being posted. I had been a little concerned that we were focusing a little too much on the academic community as the source of the reports, but we're getting some from other places. And of course, we've got our mailing list, and the various members of the committee are going out and trying to solicit opinion. This whole business of finding consensus is, of course, very difficult, and it's hard to establish a proper process for doing so. But the first thing to understand is the committee has not come to secret conclusions, and it's more in a listening mode than a speaking mode, which, of course, is one of the problems that the ICANN board itself had. And I'm trying to sit here and be transparent, but at the same time, I don't want you to take my thoughts too seriously because, again, there's no formal position yet of the committee itself. The things were going to be just practical terms. We're having 2 days of working meetings tomorrow and unfortunately also on Monday. So the committee is going to miss the open meeting of the board and the community. Carl Bildt will be talking to that meeting, I think, very early Monday morning, but then we'll go back into our own meetings to try and figure out what some of these reports we've been soliciting mean, and so forth and so on. Then on Tuesday, while the ICANN board is, the ICANN's open board is tomorrow, the board meeting is on Monday. On Tuesday, we will be having our outreach meeting to which everybody is invited. There are going to be some specific panels. There's an agenda, but there's also going to be a fair amount of just general give and take discussion. We're having more outreach meetings. We're going to be meeting again in Montevideo, and there's going to be a series of an interim report and a final report that will show up in time for comments before the November board meeting in Los Angeles. So that's kind of the overall structure of what's going on. The committee was designed to represent a variety of points of view. It has two former ICANN directors on it, me and Pindar Wong. It has some sort of democracy people. It has some not-so-democracy people. It has people from outside the traditional Northern Hemisphere access. And it's trying very hard to represent a broad range of points of view. It's coming in with a clean sheet. And to mean genuinely clean sheet, it does mean you have to ask, should there be at-large directors? We do not consider any question to be a forbidden question. there may be some answers that can be dismissed pretty easily, but at the same time, no question should be forbidden. So that's where we started. We've got two big questions. One is, who should the at-large membership be? And the second is, who should be, or how should they be created? Should there be at-large directors? They're really two separate issues. And you can't really consider these questions outside the questions David raised about ICANN itself and how the board works and the DNSO and the SO structures and so forth. And so we do indeed need to work closely, especially as we come to getting some conclusions, with the SO structure, with the GA, the Names Council, whatever. There's got to be some give and take in terms of what's going to be a practical suggestion, because it's not simply, can the ICANN board create an at-large membership without considering the impact of that on the structure of the SOs? And we're keeping that in mind. The ICANN board itself is an odd sort of thing. As David said, if it is to have any legitimacy, it cannot simply vote its own interests. It has to recognize consensus. Now, you could say that's being honored more in the breach. There's a lot of delicate nuances as you consider that. But I like to think of it as being something like a court. Judges are not supposed to vote their own interests. They're supposed to interpret the law and apply the law to the facts. And the board is supposed to do something similar. It's supposed to interpret the consensus, whatever it may be, and apply that to the facts or to the decisions it has to make. And a court votes. You actually do count how many judges are for and how many are against, but at the same time, they're not voting their interests. They're voting their interpretation of the facts and the law before them. And that's, I think, the best way to think of the ICANN board, and that's also the best way to think of the ICANN directors. So that is preamble. Here are some of the things we're thinking about. When you look at the at-large membership, it's fine to talk about trying to determine consensus within a reasonably defined body, as the SOs are. They're designed to be relatively open, but they're also fairly defined. And you can poll them informally, you can have them hum, you can have meetings where they're all assembled, and you can try and figure out what consensus is. It's much harder to do that with the at-large membership, which in theory at least could include up to 400 million people. If you wanted to include all the people who are going to be ICANN members, all the dogs, if you don't know who they are. So how are you going to figure out what the consensus of all those people are, even if you define it in a much more limited way? And what you really need is some way to force or foster the emergence of the points of view, the different interests, the different sides of an issue from within that large amorphous, if you like, potential at-large membership. How do you surface not representation in terms of numbers, but points of view, representatives of issues rather than representatives of the people? And interestingly, that's something that ICANN did not attempt to do in the SOs. It simply predefined them. You can argue whether or not that was a good idea. It predefined the SOs. It predefined the constituencies. The at-large membership has to emerge. How can we make that happen? A second question you need to ask is, well, if you have those points of view, does it make more sense to put them within the SOs, and most specifically and most frequently within the DNSO, because that's where the general public is most likely to have both a stake and an opinion? My personal feeling, this is not the committee's point of view, is that when you stick them in the SOs, they kind of get drowned out. You have 1/7 of 1/3 and so forth representing, quote, the public interest, and it may not be very visible, although it certainly makes enough noise. How are you going to deal with that? Or do you want to create a separate place for them to have a voice, which would be the at-large? Then, if you decide that you're going to create, rather than five regions or nine seats or nine voting pools, how do you recognize these issue-based groups? What constitutes a recognized political party, so to speak? Is it the number of people they can get to sign a petition? Is it the clarity of their point of view? Is it in the end simply going to be that they elect a director? Who knows? Should there be an at-large council, which then selects or elects directors, or should there be something more direct? All these things not yet clear. And, of course, what are the membership requirements? Should they pay money to show that they're interested? What do you do about the differential impact of that, depending on people's incomes, depending on where they live? Should they have to pass a test? In what language should that test be? There's still a lot of open questions, and we're wrestling with them, and we welcome input and thoughts. The second, then, on the question of the at-large directors, the first question is how many, ranging from zero to a majority of the board. No answer on that yet either. My personal opinion is there should be a substantial number. But if you were to have a majority of, quote, public interest or at-large directors, you would then run the danger of ICANN becoming what they would call thick. I think it's really important for ICANN to limit what it does to as narrow a group of issues as possible, the technical issues and the unavoidable political, legal, commercial ones that end up in the domain name system. But if you start turning it into a public interest group, then it's going to start addressing broader interests like control of content, like the right to anonymity, freedom of speech, privacy beyond what you do with the who is and so forth. And I hope that there a consensus on those issues, number one, could not be reached. Number two, I don't think it should be reached. I think you should leave that stuff to a market. You should leave it to a diversity of interest. You should leave it to perhaps individual GTLDs if they want to set policies that are very strict on something. God bless them. But I don't think ICANN should be setting general policies on almost anything. And one way to keep it from getting too thick is to keep it limited in its purview and not to make it be a public interest organization. Make it an organization that considers the public interest as it deals with primarily technical questions. Beyond that, now getting back to what the committee is doing, how do we elect these directors? Should they represent regions? Should they represent points of view, i.e. parties? Should you have simply X directors and the X pools of largest numbers of vote wins, or do we want some more complicated voting mechanism? Those are some of the issues that are going to get pretty deep and complex, and we're still at the beginning of considering those. Okay. Where that leaves us is there are a lot of issues still open. Beyond the board, if the board is a court, there's still the Court of Appeals, which is the independent review panel. The question of how the at-large membership should be funded, and just in passing, the at-large study committee at least firmly believes that the lack of funding for an at-large election means absolutely nothing in the current budget, and we're waiting to see that number appear, but we don't know what it is yet, and we don't know how much the at-large membership will cost. So that is where we stand. And why don't I leave it at that and answer questions or discuss or something?
Why don't we take questions? Ben, please.
You don't turn on. You'll get it.
Keep mumbling.
I am screaming at the top of my lungs. This is something I have to do with you?
No. The technician doesn't present. It doesn't look like.
Do you want to borrow mine? This is called Chairman something.
Monkey business. First of all, you can tell why Esther is smiling, because she isn't chairman of ICANN anymore. She's doing some useful work. Good for her. I want to endorse one thought, which is keeping ICANN as thin as possible. It has already enough work on its plate. The temptation is overwhelming when there's a visible body that has any authority, any control, any kind of say in what happens to some part of the Internet. It acts like a giant magnet. And if there are any other issues associated with the Internet, everyone wants that body to take on whatever the task is. And I pray we will defend against that, or the body will become completely ineffective. The one question I had for Esther is looking at the growth rate of use of the net. The projections that I have are that by 2010, 3.5 billion people will have access to the Internet by some means or other. It may be laptops, personal digital assistants, Internet-enabled cell phones, Internet appliances of all kinds. The idea that a particular infrastructure service, kind of like the power system or the road system, needs to have a kind of global election to manage the underlying infrastructure is hard to fully appreciate. I mean, we don't do that for the power system, and we don't do it for the road system, but it's still really important for the people who are affected by policies to have something to say about it. So I'm wondering whether the committee has thought about the fact that the scaling might become just impossible to manage in literally a democratic kind of environment, and instead you have to look for other ways of getting public comment on policies, which we do by other than just straight democratic elections.
I would say the committee has certainly thought of this, and so have I. And that's why we're not talking about direct democracy, and we're certainly not talking about referenda. What we are talking about is two things. One, ICANN needs to create a structure within which consensus among points of view can be both fostered and then recognized, and that recognition by a vote of the board leads to legitimacy. And as a member of the board, I know that there's a big difference between the ideal and the reality. But having the ideal there is very worthwhile, because if you stray too far from it, people can shove you back. And this whole issue of ICANN's legitimacy, it has none. It's a contracting body. Unless it follows, to some extent, those rules, it won't have any legitimacy. So the challenge is, how do you get those points of view expressed? And the public, most of the public does not care about most of these things. And let's face it, most of ICANN's actual work and the details of the contracts, perhaps too many of them, are actually done by the staff and not by the board. But you can have as large, you can have millions and millions and millions of people, you could still have issue groups emerge. I guess the one thing to be said is ICANN's going to create a structure into which this can happen. But then there's a much different thing that has to happen, and that is people do have to self-organize, not in ponderous ICANN-sponsored committee meetings, but themselves. I remember talking to somebody in Eastern Europe who said to me, I want to form a political party, but I'm waiting to get my government funding first. And if you have a point of view, don't wait for ICANN to recognize your constituency. Promote that point of view, find adherents, And then somewhere in the middle, if the at-large study committee does its job right, there will be a way for that point of view, that group of adherents, to catch on to something official that will allow it to attend some kind of meeting and make that voice heard in a setting formal enough that the ICANN board needs to recognize it. But if you wait for ICANN to determine how you can legitimately start the process, you're going to wait forever. And so it's a kind of bottom-up meets a sideways determined. Yeah, it's clumsy. But it requires bottom-up action that's distinct from whatever particular structures ICANN creates. Then the bottom-up action has to grab hold of those structures and use them, and then see if your point of view actually is part of the consensus. I've talked to people who want one organization in particular, I won't mention its name, but they wanted to sue ICANN to get it to do what they wanted, and then to let them determine what ICANN should do. And I said, I happen to agree with some of the things they want, but they need to go and get their own adherence and come see if people actually want to do what they want to do. You've got to prove you have the support, and then you've got to go out and earn the consensus or trade it off. Let's be real again. There's a lot of power broking that does go on here, and some of it is not open, but the results of it are open. The contracts are open. The final decisions are open, and everybody can comment on them, and at least the consensus has to agree with them, or they simply don't go into effect.
Vince, if I could add just one thought.
David, we'll see you.
If I could add one thought, the more diversity in policies in different areas of the net are allowed, the more the choices of individuals participating with particular providers or operating within particular spaces on the net actually reflect a kind of user choice that takes pressure off the need to provide voice in a centralized control system. So I think that's another important mechanism.
I'm a big fan of diversity. In fact, I'm a big fan of basic designs that promote a lot of experimentation and diversity. However, I'm also a big fan of getting the architecture right and not introducing technical elements that cause it to crumble. And so while I'm a fan of diversity, I'm not a fan of diversity that causes the entire structure to collapse. And so you'll find me trying very hard to stick close to that line, which says, design things to be as simple as possible so that they can support all kinds of possibilities, but don't design them so that all the complexity shows up at the core and causes it to fail to operate. I apologize, but I have to go off to the GAC meeting. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, and I have been told we have a real-time comment.
Kendall Dawson. Kendall Dawson. Kendall.
I'll use my microphone then. We have a comment from Kendall Dawson who asks, ICANN has promised that there would be 9 elected board members. 5 have been elected, which leaves 4 seats open. If the CCTLD members are attempting to gain seats on the ICANN board, do they plan to do this at the expense of membership at large seats? Anyone feel like having a stab at that? It may be a little bit too early to comment on that, but Kendall, I'm sure we appreciate your concern. I see we have Milton at the microphone. Is the microphone working yet?
I think if you speak into it, it works. I wanted to ask a question, basically following up on your comments, David, but if Esther wants to comment on this question also. You did something very ironic, probably unconsciously. You were talking about a thin ICANN, and you held up the contract, and it was very, very thick.
That was intentional, actually.
Okay, good. Because it seems to me we already have a thick ICANN. We are fallen into a
broadcast licensing model in which the control of a resource, the root, is used to extract regulatory obligations from people in exchange for getting this valuable resource, the TLD. And in that regard, I'd like to ask if you're as concerned as I am about the reaction that NewNet and some of the alternate route relationships are generating among the DNSO constituencies, in which we see a very harsh reaction developing, in which people are being told that they are destabilizing the Internet, and there's a real effort, which is pretty subterranean at this point, but it will come out more, to really use more explicitly the power of the centralization of the root to eliminate other routes, to eliminate other alternatives, and not really make it a consensual process. And I don't know, a lot of these people believe that it's wrong to even think about how they interact with other routes. I just wondered if you see this as a technical necessity, that this is justified, or do you see this as a step towards a more rigid and thick ICANN?
Well, I share your concern. I think maybe that the question, posing the question in terms of alternate routes is maybe the wrong question, because there is a unified namespace, and the real question is who is going to coordinate it. I think the most effective response that I can make to those pressures is very quickly to start the full testbed for the first seven new TLDs, and very quickly, even during that testbed, articulate minimum technical qualifications that ought to be fulfilled by anyone proposing future TLDs, and make clear that process will proceed fairly rapidly, and that the ICANN role will be to insist on minimum qualifications, adopt an allocation mechanism that is as little as possible, bringing ICANN into the gardening role, as I would have put it, the decision about whether the world as a whole needs a particular new .shop or .web or whatever. So I think there are ways for ICANN to react to those pressures and simultaneously to reduce the thickness of the regulatory model.
Since I'm up here, I'd like to just comment on that too briefly. Two points. One, I see the ICANN board as being more of an antitrust enforcer than a regulator, ideally. And obviously that raises the question, well, antitrust is a way of reducing undue, unfair market or other power, and does ICANN itself have too much power? And so, partly to set the record straight, and also just in general, I do not think ICANN should ever have the power to make things outside itself illegal. And, of course, it doesn't. But it shouldn't try, it shouldn't be asked to, etc. It should try to win adherence, and I think, as David said, the best way to win adherence is, number one, to open up as quickly as possible all TLDs that will work and let some that will not work fail of their own accord. Try and foster systems that make those failures as lightweight to people as possible, but it needs to open up more broadly if it wants to win adherence. And second, it needs to foster diversity. The requirements to be a TLD that has access to, quote, the approved or the ICANN root service should be very, very lightweight and minimal. They should not require huge contracts. Let it work out in the market. The only thing you want governments to enforce is disclosure requirements, that these organizations, whatever they are, state honorably and honestly what they are.
Thank you for that. We'll now take a comment from the floor.
Yeah, Keith Tier, Real Names Corporation. First, to disclosure, I'm a political science major, so I listen to all these discussions through the prism of Machiavelli and Plato and other familiar political systems discussions. And if I was to characterize Esther's view, the closest I can think of is Plato's Republic, where the people really, you know, could shout, but the philosopher kings took all the decisions. And the ICANN board would be, you know, really clever people that we all recognize as clever. And we can seek to influence them by organizing in the demos, And if we succeed in getting enough attention, you'll recognize that and anoint us. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. Real Names has been around for 4 years now, and we try and make a lot of noise, and we're a keyword system outside of DNS. I'm kind of schizophrenic about my relationship to ICANN. On the one hand, I'm frightened to death that you might want to regulate me. On the other hand, I'd love your approval. And I think that schizophrenia is a constant element of any attempt to change infrastructure, because approval is a requirement of success. On the other hand, regulation is probably the kiss of death, and there's always a tension between those two things. So what I find, and maybe this is just to helping you to understand how somebody from the outside perceives this, I don't really have any formal way of talking to you. In fact, standing at this microphone is probably the only way I get to have a conversation, other than what I do outside. And I would love the Philosopher Kings to have some kind of formalized way that we can interact with them and bring new stuff so that it can be very speedily thought about. I don't think there's ever been, ever since the ICANN conference in Singapore, when I had a dialogue with the ICANN board very briefly, I don't think there's ever been a dialogue between Real Names and the ICANN board, for example, or any of the committees of the ICANN board. And that's certainly not because we wouldn't want to have such a dialogue. I think there's a fear from the ICANN board that if they talked to us, they somehow would be legitimizing us, and that makes them fearful of not having a dialogue. So I think there's a lot of bureaucracy between the Philosopher Kings and the Demos, and the fluid process of winning approval and then seeking consent actually doesn't have any processes connected to it.
Can I ask him some questions?
Oh, please.
What do you want approval for? Has ICANN stopped you from doing anything?
Absolutely not. Approval really is... I think in any technology, consensus is really important. And approval, if consensus needs to be recognized, to me that's approval. So I actually believe there is a consensus that keywords are a good innovation to domain names. It hasn't been recognized. So to me, approval is recognizing something that already exists, but I have no means of telling you that I think it exists other than to stand at this microphone. Or just write things in and so on.
I mean, it seems to me you should just go run your business. And
which is what I'm doing, Esther.
Yeah. Okay, so if you want an endorsement from ICANN, you're right. You have to go through incredibly complicated processes. There is not an it to talk to. There's the ICANN board. There's the General Assembly. You're not talking to the ICANN board here.
I'm aware of that.
I mean, and I think it's good that you should be able to just go ahead and do your business and try and win out in the marketplace. And if you get too powerful, then ICANN needs to enforce antitrust against you. But otherwise,
Well, I hear what you're saying, but that's in distinction to what you said earlier. Because earlier you said consensus must be won and then be recognized.
If you want ICANN to endorse you formally, then you need to win, quote, you need to get that final consensus.
But if
you don't want ICANN to do anything other than leave you alone,
we have to, I think, distinguish between the role of consensus policies in the contracts is very special standard for when a registry or registrar must comply with something that it would otherwise object to and not willingly follow. A new element that's different from all the political science we've had is that anything left for variation above the minimum set of rules that most people agree are required to preserve the interconnection of the domain name system, if we allow variation, we have a marketplace among rule sets at that level. And it seems to me much more important from your perspective and that of everybody here to preserve the choice among differing rule sets rather than trying to get approval to bring them all into one central thick political body that would stifle innovation.
I think I probably agree, but I remain schizophrenic.
All right, we have one brief comment that came in. This is a comment, not a question. Comes from Roberto Gaetano. Roberto says, I think the key issue boils down to a comment already made by Wilkinson and Twomey in a past ICANN meeting. Either ICANN bases its representativity on wide consensus at large, or we have to have a role for national governments. It definitely cannot be ruled by business interests alone.
For that, thank you, Roberto. And now another comment from the floor.
Thank you very much. My name is Wolfgang Kleinwächter from Digital University of Aarhus in Denmark. My question relates to the last comment on the role of governments. I think one of the innovative things in ICANN was that governments are not included in digital management structures. They are in an advisory capacity, and they are not eligible. Governmental representatives are not eligible for the board of directors. In a meeting we had a couple of months ago, a representative from a national government criticized this structure rather strongly and said, he would see, would prefer a situation where ICANN is advising the governments and not that the governments are advising ICANN. And, I heard some discussions also yesterday that if we restructure the system of supporting organizations, why not governments should have their own supporting organizations and become a structure? And my question is how you would react to this and how do you see the role of government? Because in particular in your presentation, you said certainly, we do not operate outside the law and the law is made more or less on the national level, international level by governments.
My reaction is that governments have traditionally claimed, at least, to be representative, and part of that stems from the fact that there's a given sovereign country makes law on behalf of everyone situated in the country, and there is substantial pressure for them to represent the interests of their citizens. The ICANN board concept of representativeness, I think, is a very different concept. It really has more similarity to representative sample than representative delegation of rulemaking power. And its function is not to act on behalf of the people by deliberating in the legislature. It is to provide a test mechanism, as sensitive as possible, to determine when a false claim of consensus has been made. So I agree with Esther's characterization, and one of the things the at-large study should think hard about is how to get a board that is the most reliable measuring device to determine when somebody is asserting the existence of a consensus, notwithstanding the fact that substantially adversely impacted parties are not reasonably willing to go along and are reasonable in their opposition. So I think there's a very big difference between the government problem of representativeness and the ICANN problem of representativeness.
I've seen way too many different governments to think that most of them, number one, are representative, and number two, even those that are, I don't think there's any politician who's ever been elected on the basis of his opinions about the kinds of things that ICANN has to handle.
But they say that all law grows out of the barrel of a gun, and we have a gun here known as the domain name system, and we have to use the force it creates very carefully.
All right, well, on that note, I'd like to ask if there are any other companies or interests here that perhaps feel like they have been under the gun that would like to make a comment to this audience. Well, good. Aren't shooting anybody yet. All right. I wanted to ask Esther a question. You did mention that the range of comments so far with regard to the number of directors ranged from one end to a majority. Has anyone as yet introduced the notion of all of the directors being elected by the at-large?
I'm sure someone has. I can't cite it, but it doesn't matter. It's certainly something we'd have to consider, but I think the chances that we would suggest that are pretty low.
All right. And along those lines, could you characterize the relationship between your group and the Interim Coordinating Committee? Have you had dialogue?
We've had a full, fair, and frank exchange of views. I don't know if we've traded formal letters that have been notarized, but the committee is trying to be as friendly and interactive as it can with everybody. It suffers from the same problem that ICANN does, which is a shortage of people to actually talk to other people. We were invited to the meeting yesterday. I don't know if, I think a couple of us were there, I'm not sure.
Pierre was there, I believe.
Yeah, okay. And we're trying to talk to and listen to everybody that's around. The committee doesn't have, how shall we say, the open wounds that are liable to inflammation that a lot of people in this whole game do. And they're interested in listening to people they can learn from. I think they probably inadvertently stepped on people's toes, including yours, because they didn't know enough. And there's an awful lot to learn about ICANN, and there's also a lot of text and even more subtext. But we're trying to do, in a sense, what ICANN itself is trying to do, which is foster and recognize some kind of consensus. But we're also like ICANN, trying to design something that's going to work.
Sure.
And regardless of what Keith here said earlier, it's only going to work if people bottom up come and use the levers that it extends to move the internal mechanism around.
You have the floor.
Yes, thanks. I have a question mainly for David Johnson, and that is, in your proposal, the at large as it is, it seems to be quite the opposite of the consensus model. And I was wondering whether that can just be a way to ensure that the consensus procedures that you emphasize are followed through, because the diversity of interest has to be part of those who have the testing mechanism in their hands, and that would be the board. So ensuring a diversity of interest would also mean that that diversity comes from a larger group, and that would be the wider community, and not just the interests represented in the supporting organizations at the moment.
I think I agree with the point you're making. I don't have a strong view myself as to exactly how the at-large membership should be constituted, but I do think that because a lot of the policies with regard to domain names will be made in the DNSO, it's critical to have a rich source of voices in the DNSO itself, so that you're not attempting to deal in the at-large constituency with policies that have been pre-digested only among those who have traditional commercial stake.
As I look around the room, I'm looking for someone to step up to the microphone. In particular, I'd like to ask if we now have at this point any members that are either part of the Interim Coordinating Committee of the At-Large or that attended the meeting that perhaps would like to address this assembly and give us an idea of their activities.
Or we can all go hear the NICE report.
Oh, that's a thought. In fact, what time is that scheduled? That's
right now.
That's now. All right, good. Why don't we do that? For those that want to take in the NICE report right now, this would be a good moment to take an interim break. We're pretty close to wrapping this thing up, and I'm sure we're going to have more people that want to come forth and speak. So, yeah, actually, that would be great. Let's see.
They're going to start a convoy, I think.
Okay, the NICE report. This is the NGO and Academic ICANN Study. A lunch discussion is scheduled at the First Hotel Royal Star. That's right across from here in the Skyton Room. Scheduled to start 12 on television. Says, please bring a lunch and join discussion of the NICE interim report. It is quite a report, and I do encourage all of you that are interested in
the at-large study to definitely take advantage of it. Unless we have other people that want to step up to the microphone, we're pretty much ready to adjourn this meeting. As I see no one hustling to the microphone, the meeting is adjourned. Have a good day. Thank you all for coming. The General Assembly thanks you.
Claro, 50 centímetros.
50 centímetros. Disappear like smoke. Friends will arrive, friends will disappear. If you want me, honey, baby, I'll be here.